Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. I had a horrible night last night. I slept about 3 hours. I have been, I've given a couple of crappy AA talks in the last 2 months. And I don't know what it is. You know, you still have to give them. Wish you could send a cassette in. And so I haven't figured that out, and I doubt I will. But it's troubling, and I haven't been feeling particularly well tonight. But by this morning, I think I got my demons out. Last night, I took an Alka-Seltzer Plus, and I think it wired me. I don't know what happened, but I could not turn it off. Sometimes those cold medications have the opposite effect that you want. So we're going to see. So I decided rather than give a talk this morning, I'm going to have a conversation. And also because I'm in the slot that Sandy was in, this is what Sandy and I often did. Sandy Beach's 50th AA birthday is today. One of Richard's Anderson's strong wishes is that, you know, he be honored, and he has been honored sporadically through the talk. He was an extraordinary man. He was, for all sorts of reasons, most of us are familiar with him, so I won't get into one. He was always one of the top communicators in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, Clancy talks to more people, Bob Darrell. Clancy and Bob Darrell today are the most, the largest communicators we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sandy was always one of the best. He always had a gift for language. He had a gift for humor. He had a gift for conciseness, which is surprising. I do not have that gift. I have some gifts of insight. Sandy had a gift of insight and conciseness, which you need about an extra 10 points of IQ to take. To have that combination. Sheldon has that combination. Many of us do, not all of us do. But Sandy, the last 10 years, put it in a different gear. He took, you know, we all kind of think of drop the rock. You know, we each of his talks and some of his talks had a special insight. But in the last 10 years, he studied, he read. He was ready to do his retreat. He was ready to present his opus to us. And I've been exposed to a lot of AA speakers in my almost 47 years of sobriety. To be a speaker that people want to hear, you first of all have to have had the problem in a fairly serious way. You have to do the work. You have to see what you have done. There's lots of people who do the work that have no idea what they've done. They're just natural. They're just, you know. And then you have to have the gift of language to language it. And he not only had the gift of language, he had a piercing gift of language. And he was further down the road than most of us have. So for those of us that are communicators, not just us, but for all of us in this room, he shed a light in places that many of us were headed but had not been. And it was, you know, clear. So there was a, I don't know if I could put my hand on more than two. I mean, it's mostly Chamberlain and Beach. Beach, to me, was my Chamberlain of today. I was not as close to Chuck as many people were. Bob White was my Chamberlain. And there are many people in private rooms, which Bob White was, but Sandy was a very special gift to us. And I love you, Sandy. Cool. They're going to do a memorial service for Sandy in Tampa on January 10th in the afternoon. I think that's a Saturday. Do that. So I'm going to do my level best to have a conversation. I don't know exactly where the hell it's going to go, but I figured out I don't care at the moment. So I'm going to have, I really don't, so I... We'll see where the hell it goes. And I want to be clear that Sandy asked Sheldon to join us when Sandy was failing. I don't think he would have asked if he was... really helpful. I hope we leave this room after this talk in the same, with the same feeling and place we were after Sonia sang. So I'm going to talk about, when I listen to Clancy talk, Clancy and I are so different in so many different ways. We have some similarities. He is a man as focused on action and behavior as anybody that we have in our fellowship. He has a strength in that area as great as anybody we have in our fellowship. I have a little different focus. I've always been a little intimidated when I talk that I'm foo-foo, you know, a little on the light side. when I'm around the old guys, you know, because it just, you know, most of the old guys aren't fancy. And the old gals, they have a rock-solid strength. And they, you know, the Indians talk about Nasruddin, who was the kind of the idiot savant who had only one string on his sitar or whatever it was. And someone said, why don't you get a full set of strings? And he said, well, a lot of people are looking for their note. I found mine. And if you know how to play your instrument, it is a very good thing. We've heard some great talks this weekend. I repeat that one of the reasons we're able to hear great talks is because we've got a great group of people to talk to. There's pitching and catching. There's a lot of places you could not have the talks that you've received here this weekend. You have to have someone who you can feed. If you've ever given a talk at Detox, you know what I'm talking about. They're not. You would not be giving the talks that we have here this weekend at a Detox facility because it's just not appropriate, but also because many of us are here. There are people who are early in sobriety, and I hope they get something out of what I'm doing, but many people are here to recharge their batteries, to hear the story again. Tell me one more time. Encourage me. Once you're beyond, I don't know what point it is, 10 years, 5 years, you know, once you become a journeyman, that deepens significantly, I think, around 20. If you're active and still doing the deal, we're just fellow travelers, you know, reporting to each other and encouraging each other as we go. There really is, most of us have kind of set our path, and unless there's a serious problem or a secret that we're hiding, we're just going to deepen our path. And every once in a while, there's a rock we have to turn over, but most of us have turned over most of those rocks and dealt with most of those issues in our lives. I want to take a minute and talk about how wonderful we are as a group. We keep forgetting we're the head of the food chain. We are the only species that can have consciousness of self and consciousness of God. You could not have this conversation with any other species, with any other group of people than the group of people that are in this room. We think we are seated in this room. Let me change the scale a little bit. We're going 1,000 miles an hour around the center of the earth. And we don't feel that because the atmosphere is going 1,000 miles an hour around the center of the earth. We are going 65,000 miles an hour around the sun. The sun is going 500,000 miles an hour around the black hole in the Milky Way. And the universe is expanding 165,000 miles an hour. And we think we're sitting still in our seat. Okay. Through the evolutionary process, do you realize how many successful matings there would have to be just to have human beings, much less Polly, Dick, or Bob? This, to have you, it had to be your mother and father at a specific second, because it had it been an instant later, you would have been your sister. You would not have been you. You would not have been you. It had to be those specific people. So the way God arranged it to have you here, he had to have Fred and Mabel at a specific moment, at a specific instant to have you. You know what the most common element in the universe is? Hydrogen. Do you know what percent of the material it is in the universe? 75% of all the material in the universe that we're aware of is hydrogen. Do you know what the next most common element is? Helium. Do you know what the percentage is for helium? Almost 25%. Doesn't that seem weird? That 99.5% of all the elements in the universe that we're aware of are hydrogen and helium. All the rest of the elements are rounding errors. In order to get the elements that comprise our body and make our planet, after the Big Bang 14 billion years ago, there was a supernova explosion in the Milky Way. Supernovas are the collapse of large stars. When a star is formed, it's a furnace, and in that furnace, it starts making elements. And it makes elements that get heavier and heavier until it gets to iron. And when it gets to iron, it can't make anymore, and it starts to die. And when that star dies, it implodes, and in that fusion process of that star exploding come all the heavier elements, heavier than carbon. So we literally are the thing of the stars. So all the material of our solar, 99% of the material in that stellar explosion is in the sun. The rest of it is in the planets. But we are literally made of the stuff of the stars. There are 32 trillion cells in your body. Every 3 months, every red blood cell in your body is replaced. 25 million a second. And we have no awareness of that. But we have any idea of the complexity and wonder that we are? That how high up in the food chain. Yeah, but I just lost my job. I mean, you are the king of the universe. You can commune with God. You can love. You know, but we're car payments late. And that is what, I mean, it is the yin and the yang of the thing. So much of what goes on in our system is the autonomic system in our bodies. Almost all the conversations we've had, and we've had some really rich, funny, in-depth conversations. I'm a little bit more tuned into what Bob and... But Mari, during my night from hell, I was going over the communications and the talks of the other people. We have so much talk about ourselves, and we are so neurotic. I mean, 99% of the problems, I mean, alcoholics have are manufactured by the alcoholic, resolved and congratulated by the alcoholic. I mean, it is just, they're illusionary. I mean, they're illusionary. We make them up and then we congratulate ourselves for resolving them and we talk about it the next time we give a talk or the meeting. You know, had we just left the damn thing alone, it would have resolved on itself, but we got our nose in the middle of it. And the other thing I found myself wanting to say is alcoholism is a disease. We talk about that, but most of us don't stray from the book and say that it's an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And we talk about the allergy or the physical element of that thing more about how our bodies react. But it's a disease. A disease is diagnosable. There's plenty of people outside of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that you could take yourself to or take your child to, which we had done a couple of times. My wife's a carrier, and none of us were alcoholic when we met her. The good news is she's also a healer. It's diagnosable. It's diagnosable by your pattern of drinking. It's diagnosable by your obsession with it. It's diagnosable by the consequences in which we do it and we keep going back. There is no other element in the world other than some drugs that we would take where we would keep going back and having the consequences we had to something that we were not as addicted to or entwined with as we were with beverage, alcohol, and other drugs that we take. When I was young in sobriety, they had a lot of sober people take the MMPI. And the purpose of us taking the MMPI at that point who were sober was to compare the MMPI to the MMPIs of people who were coming into treatment who were wet alcoholic. Well, the MMPI of a wet alcoholic looks like the silk screen of the Grand Teton Mountains. You know, it has got a lot of peaks and valleys. We have been diagnosed through time with every mental disease known to man. Okay, chronic depression. And one of the reasons that we have been so searched in that process is that medicine, in large, has looked at alcoholism as symptomatic, not a direct illness in itself. And if we could treat the underlying symptom, the alcoholism would be handled. Now, most of us, to some degree, have sociopathy, have behavior disorders. We talked about, Mari, illuminated that, why do I do the things I do? I mean, bad girl, bad guy. Why do we, and we cross lines that if you regularly cross those lines, people would say you had a behavior disorder. We regularly show symptoms of manic depression or mood issues, okay? We have conversations with ourselves. We almost exhibit symptoms of schizophrenia, not the psychosis aspect of it, but many others aspect of it. So it's not surprising that people who had a chronic alcoholic taking a look at the actions in their lives would have diagnosed us symptomatically. And many of us drag some of those symptoms, some of us have elements of those symptoms alive in our sobriety and have to have help and deal with those symptoms beyond what the normal trace of. But many of, almost all alcoholics to me have, I mean, when you look up alcoholism, it's not in the physical part of the DSM. It's under mental illness. Most of it, we are the elite of the mentally ill. But the conversations we have amongst ourselves is, and I'm going to pick on Sheldon a little bit, and then I did this, and I thought this, and he has such a humorous way of getting into what we all do with our stories when we're kind of telling those embarrassing moments where we're still dealing with the defects of character and some of the lingering things that we have not dealt with. Well, that's no surprise to anybody who deals with alcoholics. It's only a surprise to us. We're not surprised when it happens to anybody else at the meeting. Okay, we kind of expect it. We recognize the patterns of the people in our group, and Joe did it again. But when it happens to us for the 172nd time, okay, we're surprised because this is different. It's different. Our wives are not surprised. Our children are not surprised. Our employers are not. Just us. Because we don't get it, okay? In some ways, alcoholism and recovery from alcoholism is as simple, and I think that's why the people who founded it and some of the people who came closely after, especially the Second World War crowd, just had a rock solid, simple, they were not as psychological. I mean, the religion of today is psychology. The amount of depth, I mean, people doing 30-page inventories, I mean, give me a break. If you would have done a 30-page inventory when you were, the inventories were, mom and dad, wife and children, work, money, and a couple, brothers and sisters, and they were not complex, going back to grade school and all the sorts of things, but why today? Because psychology is a place of interest, and it's about us. And so many people today also have therapists when they come in, in addition to if they have money in the family or whatever going on, they're doing some search. And that's helpful. But as Anthony DeMello said, psychology, transfers the bomb from your lap to under your seat, but it is not deep enough, to really reach the resolutions that we need reached in our lives. Okay? So what we have access to is a program that alters our lives in a way that is just absolutely unpredictable. What we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is a program that replicates spiritual awakening. I don't know where the hell else you could say that sentence and have anybody hear it, much less catch it, and go, yeah, what are we doing? We're trying to take someone who's broken, who has had every kind of help thrown at, every kind of advice thrown at that person that they could possibly have, and no one could make a difference, and we're trying to bring them into a process. What we're trying to do is light their pilot light. The 12-steppers light pilot lights. And once you get the pilot light lit, Bob talked about the embers last night, it's going to be okay. Got to keep it lit. There's some pretty strong winds out there today. The environment in which we are doing that today is so different than the environment. I laugh at the people, not laugh because there's serious members of Alcoholics Anonymous, who think we're going to go back to the 30s. We aren't the people of the 30s. We don't have the consciousness of the people of the 30s. You know, I mean, God. I mean, today the kids are growing up with these video games and they're just, you know, everybody's walking around with a phone and a Starbucks cup. I mean, it is, if you don't have the right pair of jeans on, the right pair of glasses, the right car, you're just trash. I mean, it is just, we have sold out at a level of externalness that would be hard to explain. And our lives are so busy. I mean, I look back at the time in the 50s, and you could leave your bicycle at your neighbor's yard for 3 days and go back and get it. You know, today, you know, you have to have a titanium lock on the thing. Today, you can bring your computer in your bedroom and you can have pornography, gambling, and order medications. Okay, whatever happened to Bob? Oh, he died. Yeah, of what? Of starvation. He couldn't leave his bedroom. I mean, it was. People are sending your credit cards. You can get $75,000 worth of debt in credit cards, you know, with an ease that, you know, I mean, the worst trouble I could get in with a couple of grand on my checking plus line, you know. But today, there's a wind blowing out there today that is 30 miles an hour. If you're wondering why you might drift if you stop, it's that. We are what we fill ourselves full of. And that's invisible to us. So is an hour a day going to impede that? Yeah, for most of us it is going to impede that. But when you're new, you may need one or two meetings a day to impede that conversation that's going on in your head. Most of us walk, alcoholics have one of the highest suicide rates of any group of people on the earth. Sober and drunk. Okay? What kind of an internal conversation would a person have to do themselves in? I have a tendency to serious depression. I used to think that was an indication of a bad program. It's just something I have. It's like, I also have diabetes. I mean, it's just, I have it. No, you know, no good or bad, just have it. It doesn't have me as much as it used to have me, but I have it. What kind of an internal conversation do we have to have that be a real, these teenage deaths? What kind of a conversation are these 15-year-old children having that life is so unbearable to them? They're having our conversation. And we have a place that heals that, that transforms it. I don't know where else you'd take a body. I mean, will you take it up in the top of the house and lower it, you know, to the master who's down below talking to the people to get, you know, would you take it to Bethesda to throw them in the pool? You take them here. It doesn't matter what kind of a problem they have. You take them to the power. You take them to the source. The language, as I get older, my language has changed around some of the things that we've been talking about. We have a fascination in the type of conversations that I'm going to go back to that specific conversation that Sheldon had about the job and the work. And by the way, it was interesting to me, I love your conclusion, but Sandy talked about anytime we have an upset, okay, we either owe someone an amend or we need to forgive them. And I thought, oh, that's a cheap reduction of a very complicated process. But that's one of his gifts of simplicity. Anytime we have a reason, we're caught, we're hooked, in that moment, we either need to forgive someone or make an amend. And I have yet to, and I have looked, am looking for an exception to that. But if I want to heal that process, like Sheldon healed that process, that's what I would do. This surprise that we have, that we are as neurotic as we are, is a surprise of the mind. It's a surprise of the ego. So I'm supposed to talk about the 10th and the 11th step. Now let me do that just for a minute because I'm in serious danger of getting sidetracked, as I already have been. But this is not a talk. This is a conversation. And often in a conversation, we would stray from the central subject. So we've taken people whose lives have disintegrated, who have harmed everybody they've come in arm reach of, who have broken laws, who have crossed ethical lines and crossed moral divides with a regularity that only a sex addict bank robber would, have the audacity to do. We started lying when we were young. One of the great questions about your use is, when did you start lying about your drinking? Almost immediately. Who taught you how to do that? Liz Mari said, no one taught me how to do that. And we show up here with a, razor wire 30 feet out in all directions. Skull and crossbone, landmines, sitting in our tanks, looking through the slot at them. And we enter into Alcoholics Anonymous. And then people try to find an entry point. Like an egg, there is no entry point. Like Leonard Cohen talks about, the entry point is where you get cracked open. That's where the light comes in. That's where the grace enters. Your gift is your surrender. So we come in here with zero insight. Many of us are smart. A lot of us have, information. A lot of us have some insight. Almost no wisdom. Okay? Almost no understanding, with a pattern of habitual behavior that has been so ingrained and locked in, we literally almost have no choice, and those behaviors and patterns show up like in a blackout. They are automatic. The bell's going to go off, we shoot our jump shot. Automatic. Not a question, not a thought. Automatic. Most of us focus when we tell our stories, and we get into the delightful way we do that, we talk about what we're conscious of. When 98% of what's going on in your system is unconscious. But all we're aware of is what we're conscious of. We're not aware of the subconscious, which many of the serious things that we're dealing with that Mari was talking about come from the subconscious. Not from our consciousness. If they came from our consciousness, we could head them off. But many of us find ourselves into those patterns without having any idea. Well, you're riding an elephant. The elephant's invisible. When the elephant wants to go left, unless you really have something else going on in your life, you are going left. And in some ways, in Alcoholics Anonymous, with the grace of God and the 12 steps that we have a practice which trains elephants. We do. Later, I'm going to talk about meditation. Thomas Keating, I think I upset Bob. Thomas Keating is kind of the successor of Merton. And Merton, I read Merton every day. I mean, he's one of us. I mean, he really was all over the map. He was just, he was one of us. And you'd be less surprised. So many of us don't deal with the chicken shit little things in our lives because we just don't want to kind of admit to them or face them. Everybody has them. Merton had them. You know, Peter, you know, lived with Christ. Jesus who? I don't know him. You know, I mean, you know, for three years he hangs out with the guy and throws him to the wolves the moment the heat comes on. I mean, it is not, they don't make anybody who doesn't leak and doesn't have the holes and doesn't have the cracks. The cracks are there for a reason, as Sheldon talks a little bit about in his talk. It's the opening. It's where we're healed. It is a signal. It is like putting your hand on a hot stove. The message from the universe is, it is not working. So our program takes the only thing that the universe can do. It cracks us open. We don't surrender. Most of us are surrendered by the circumstances in which they overwhelm us. Our walls have to be cracked, and we are not strong enough to punch a crack in them. The punch has to come from God. It has to come from the universe. It has to come externally, and we are handed it. And when we are handed it, our ego collapses. And when our ego collapses, we're open. There's a clearing. In AA, we talk about the honeymoon. That's the clearing. That's the person who wasn't interested in any of your little meetings. You know, what's the difference between an alcoholic and a drunk? You know, meetings and all those. I don't want your meetings. I don't want your God. I don't want that kind of, I'm not interested in that. I wasn't interested in that conversation. It didn't matter. I was broken open. And without having any sense that anything was different, but anybody who was an old timer could have told you something's different about that kid. I think he's going to be okay. You know, news to me. I continued to have a lot of problems. I mean, I still did things that weren't great, but I was in my seat, had my place, and in the game. Imperfectly, but in the game. And because I stayed in the game, I was able to have this thing happen to us. So on the big book, in the four step, when it talks about first we get well spiritually, and then physically, and then emotionally, then spiritually, I always thought that was backwards. That first we get well physically, because that's the simplest. I'm young, you get well physically. But had I not had something happen to me that would have allowed me to go to meetings, get a sponsor, listen to what you were saying, I would not have been able to take my seat. I wouldn't have been able to hear. So the something that happened to me was spiritual. It was profound. It was different. In a treatment facility, everybody knows when it happens to Mary. Mary was a pain in the butt for the first 2 weeks. You know, she was always trying to leave. We were trying to talk her out of it, and all of a sudden, bam, Mary's in the game. What happened? Step one. What happened? Surrender. What happened? Ego collapse. What happened? In the game. Mary's now talking people out of leaving. Entirely different conversation. I don't think Mary knows what the hell happened to her. But everybody in the group knows what happened to her. They know she's different. She looks different. Okay? Butch just got healed of a physical situation in his life. He looks different. There's a different vitality. There's a different energy. There's something different. Okay? We're waiting for that to happen with Sheldon. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But I'm sorry. It was just... Okay. So if we have that level of distress, if we have taken our lives and burnt them to the ground, why are we surprised? No one who works with alcoholics would be surprised of any of the conversations that we have up here. We're going, oh, then it happened. Well, yeah, but that's number 172. It happens all the time in your life. We're not surprised about that. You're pathologically immature, chronically narcissistic, 60 miles an hour head first, no helmets. We are not surprised that you are having these type of issues with regularity in your life. Okay? The mistake that I think I have made, I have spent most of my life, I'm a practicing Catholic, haven't gotten away from it. I spent a lot of my life trying to get better. I remember at Notre Dame, I was such an asshole. I went out drinking almost every night, alone, no one else. I would go drink, 13 Manhattans. I'd get up in the morning. I would not go to class. I would get up in the afternoon and not go to class. And then I'd think, you should really get a book, study. And then I'd hear a ruffle of a set of cards down the hall, and I'd get into a bridge game. And then at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd put my sweater on, and I'd go downtown South Bend to my bar. And I'd walk in that bar, and I'd stay there till a hell of a lot later. After curfew, I'd have to sneak in the dorm. Remember one time I snuck in the wrong side, and the clerk in the cloister of the priest threw a priest out of bed because I thought he was in my room. I was the class drunk. They used my room as a study hall. I was never in it. When I left in my senior year, when the rector tried to talk me out of it, he said, "Just stay. You're in the yearbook. Stay." And when I left his office, I did not know where my classes were. I mean, how far away would you have to get from where to not? I hadn't been in my classes in so long. I did not know where my classes were or what they were. Okay. I have spent most of my life trying to get better. I think that many of us take the program of Alcoholics Anonymous once we start to become practitioners of the program and use it to get better. And that's kind of the central theme I want to talk about for the time that I have. So we come in here broken and without a clue. We are surrendered. We are directed, and we start to have a sense of hope, which comes in the second step, that there's going to be a power greater than ourselves. In the third step, we make a decision to turn our will and our life over to that power, and we are invited to define that power in our own terms. No theology, no teaching, no one way to do it, no barrier to that entry. Not a religious process, a spiritual process. Incomplete? Absolutely. Missing pieces? Absolutely. It's only our understanding. We start out saying we are powerless and unmanageable. Will we expect someone who is powerless and unmanageable to have a complete understanding of the power that's going to restore them to sanity? No. But we are so respectful of that person, of that specialty that person is, of the individuation of God that person is, that that person has to define their own understanding of God. That will evolve. It will change. It will deepen. But it's going to start with your seed. And it's going to start and it's going to continue with your nurturing that seed, that seedling, that plant, that tree, that harvest. Okay? To allow us to have a platform from which to live our lives, as we have lived them so poorly, we have to clear away the wreckage of the past and clean house. Step 4 is the starting of that process. Step 4 is the starting, if you read step 4, it's a starting of starting to take responsibility, and it's a starting of forgiveness, which has to be included. Most of us are so ashamed and so self-hating in that process that and we have to put ourselves in front of the truth in order for us to be healed. So step 4 and 5 are the first, or the second, major rite of passage in Alcoholics Anonymous. Kind of like you go from Weeblos to Scout or something when you go through that process. 6 and 7, most of us do not get in any depth because we are so connected to this, the profound experience we're having is so big that to pick out with great effect somewhat smaller items, most of us are not sophisticated or educated enough in our own recovery yet to really get to the causes and conditions of our illness, and we get to those somewhat later. But we can get to many of them. So most of us, at least I, went through 6 and 7 with almost, of course, am I ready to have God remove it? Yep. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings? Absolutely. Because I was. Why the hell else would you do a confession? Why the hell else would you do a inventory? You know, I mean, if I didn't have some intent to change. I mean, why do you think I'm here? Why do you think I'm in my seat? Why do you think I'm doing what I'm doing? I want it different. I want to change. You're telling me that if I go through this process, I'm going to be okay. You seem to be okay. You seem to be okay. And then we go through the most healing process, one of the most healing processes, the thing that completes the circle. We do steps 8 and 9. To take a person who has raised the level of jerk to an art form, and to bring the and who blames most of the significant people in their lives for the bad circumstances that they find themselves in, and to take them from that point to a point of putting all those people on my 8-step list and making amends of the people that I put on my resentment list. Now, if we told people when they made the resentment list that we were going to go make amends of those people when we did it, even though most of us have been in meetings and we kind of understand that, it's in the back of our minds. That is, could we understand what kind of a change you'd have to go through to be able to be willing to make amends to the people that you hated, to the people that you blame, to the people that you hurt you? Can you imagine what kind of a spiritual change would have had to have taken place for you to be able to identify that, agree to it, and do it? It used to be, in my opinion, that many people didn't have the full measure of recovery because they often didn't do step 5. And what I find today is you don't do step 8 and 9. Almost no one who is relapsing on any kind of a regular basis or even an irregular basis has usually done a complete job on 8 and 9. 8 and 9 are life-changing. That was put the... You often wonder why people are so damn talented and can't put it, you know... Because when I borrowed $1,500 from Bob at a meeting saying my tax return's coming through in March, would you, you know, I'm really tight, would you lend me $1,500? I don't have a tax return coming in. I start missing the meeting where Bob is because I told him I'd get it back to him in March and it's June, you know. And Bob's kind of a jerk and he's well off and I don't think he needs the $1,500 and I gotta kill Bob. I mean, I have a choice. I can kill me or I can kill Bob. Okay. But every time Bob comes around on the carousel of my mind, my lights dim. And I don't have one of those. I have dozens of those that bleed my soul. I need that energy to live. I need that energy to source myself as I get about the business of my life, and it is not available because it is being sucked into little black holes of incompletion in my life. That gets restored in 8 and 9. And then they say, for people like you, as troubled as you are, we have another practice that we are going to ask you to do. It's going to be a daily, it's going to be an ongoing inventory. A lifetime process. For by this time, we've entered the life of the Spirit. And we're going to ask you to keep watching for, you know, dishonesty and resentment and self-centeredness and fear. Because those are the words that they keep, they seem like they almost overuse them. I think people overuse them in the 4-step process. And I often encourage people to put other words in that might be more suiting to the things they do. But those are the broad categories of the things that bedevil us in our lives. And so they're just saying, you have emptied the knapsack that you've been lugging around. You've had 9 bowling balls in that thing, and you've been wondering why you can't run with the other kids. why you can't run as far as the other kids. You're as smart as the other kids. You have the advantage of the other kids, but you don't seem to be able to keep up with the other kids. Well, not surprising. But now that you've emptied that out, let's try to keep it as light as possible. Let's not throw more rocks in the knapsack, or as little as possible. So we're going to take a look at our actions. And for most of us, it's those flinch moments. It's those moments where you walk out of an incident where you didn't handle it correctly. By your assessment, by your values, by your ethics, by your morals, by your compassion, by your sense of how you want to be in your own life, you didn't handle it well. And in that moment, it's what we talked about with Sheldon, you either forgive the person or you make an amend. You talk to another person if you're really hooked, and then you get about the business of trying to help someone else. That's about as simple and about as clear and about as, you know, I mean, of course. That's great. You've now given me a practice, a mechanism. We're saying the biggest thing you have, we're trying to get you to not be upset. We're trying to calm you down. We're trying to have you stay in peace. How are we going to do that? We're going to give you a mechanism. You've handled your past. And now we're going to give you a practice to handle the present. And then following that, we're going to get into prayer and meditation, and I'm going to talk a little bit more further about that because a lot of us have issues with that. But the central thing, I'm not exactly sure, Lee, when I started. The central thing that I find for myself, and this is, I do a lot of reading, I tend to get complicated, and I may get lost in what I'm about to share with you, but if I can't share what's going on with my life, I don't want to do this. So this isn't, you know, I'm not up here trying to give a canned talk, I'm trying to give you, you know, I live a pretty good life. I'm 30 pounds overweight, and I have issues with smoking, and I have too much focus on finance from time to time. Those would be the three leading issues in my life that I have to deal with on an ongoing basis. Aside from that, most of my problems are chicken shit. I love my wife. I have a good relationship with my kids. My life's pretty clear. There isn't anything in my life that I haven't talked with someone about. And, you know, so my life's... So I'm a, you know, give myself a, you know, a B plus, B minus. Don't know how, if I'm grading myself, which I shouldn't do, because you never have a sense of how you're doing in a spiritual process. But I think a mistake that many of us make, and I think we are led into it, often when we're listening to someone give a AA pitch, our minds are listening. The judgment part of us, right now, our minds are not listening, our hearts are listening. There's a quietness in this room that is, we're connected. We're in this conversation. I'm not giving a pitch. We're in this conversation together. Okay. But a lot of times when we're listening to a talk, we just get there, we park our car, we walk in the meeting, and we're in a hurry, and we walk in, and we still have our daily mind in the process. And we listen with our heads, which we're listening to a spiritual communication with our heads. We're evaluating how the person is saying and what the person is saying, and we're judging that process. And it's bringing a knife to a gunfight. It is just, it's like missing each other in that communication. For the new person coming in, the steps are just as simple as they read. You don't need an MBA. You don't need 130 IQ. You don't need the experience that I have with 46 years of sobriety to do the steps. You just need the plain old ordinary English understanding that you have at the moment that you put yourself in front of those steps and have the willingness, having the blessing of a surrender and the willingness to make a decision to do the steps 4 through 9 and do them to the best of your ability, which for many people early in sobriety is like a third grade art project that they bring home to mom and to put on the refrigerator. It is not the inventory that someone who's 25 years sober wants to take or has to take. You don't have to do it like someone who's 15 years sober. You have to do it like someone who's brand new in sobriety, who doesn't have, you know, who has whatever understanding they have at that moment. Period. End of story. Anything worth doing is worth doing poorly. You wait to do it perfectly. Don't wait. Get into it. Do it imperfectly. And if there's something that you need to add or increase or deepen in that process, if you stay sober, if you stay in the game, you will add and deepen that process as you go on. Okay. But the process is not what the mind thinks it is. The process is not what psychology thinks it is. It is a spiritual process. Why do we value Sandy so much? Because he could transcend with his metaphoric gift. You cannot talk directly about God. You cannot talk and access and contain spirituality directly because it's of God. You can point to it. But as the Chinese say, when the master points at the moon, all the idiot sees is the finger. If you focus too much attention on the finger, you will not see the moon. If you focus too much attention on the book, you will not get the gift. But in order to get to the point where you transcend, where you take the message from the book into your soul, you have to study the book. You have to be a practitioner of the book enough to know when to leave the book. And you don't know that in your mind, and I'm not recommending that we leave the book, like physically leave the book. I'm talking about when the donkey takes you to the door, when the treasure map takes you to the chest, you have to dismount to enter the door. If we get too locked into the words, we are locked into belief and have no faith. The spiritual process, we are not going to be able to abandon the ego. The ego is a space suit to take the trip. You cannot escape the ego. But the ego can become a junior partner in the trip. It can become the errant child. It can become the noise in the back of your head that you don't pay as much attention to. I am about as uninterested in my AA talk these days as I could possibly be. Which is why I have to be careful about how often I do this and how, if I can keep it alive. What happens is we end up discovering we're not who we think we are. When DeMello tells that story, Anthony DeMello was a East Indian Jesuit, died 35 years ago, something like that, 30 years ago. He was insightful enough that the Pope banned him. He thought he was too Eastern. But he has books full of these spiritual stories, kind of like Ernie Kurtz did with The Spirituality of Imperfection. He talks about that the farmer was out in the woods one day and found an eagle's egg and brought it in and put it in the hen house. And the egg got sat on and hatched. And for this entire life, that golden eagle walked around the yard, pecking in the dirt, eating the seeds with the chickens. And one day they were out in the yard, and they looked up and they saw this beautiful golden golden eagle flying by. And the eagle said to the chicken, "What is that?" He said, "That's a golden eagle. It's the king of the sky." He says, "We're chickens." Okay. But somewhere in the process of our healing in Alcoholics Anonymous, someone holds a mirror up to us. He says, "You don't look like a chicken." (clears throat) The pilot lighters and many of the older members see in us what we cannot see in ourselves. I see it mostly in women. Women look more broken when they come in here. And the physical transformation of women once their pilot light is lit is, you know, dramatic. And when someone holds that mirror up and says, this is what you are. So the spiritual process is a process of removal, not addition, as Meister Eckhart would say. Most of us, in the human process, in the psychological process, and in the intellectual process, we are looking for addition. Give me more. Give me information. Give me a tip. I'm going to this thing. I'm going to learn a better way to do the fourth and fifth step. We're not missing any information. Does anybody in this room have a serious problem that's less than 4 years old? I mean, we have health issues and other things, but most of us, most of the ongoing issues in our lives are older than dirt. They're part of the fabric of how we are, and we haven't always been able to deal with them as effectively as we are. And that's the human condition. That's the human condition. It is exaggerated, my wife says, that's all of us. Well, we do it more dramatically than you do it. And my wife says, of course you do. We take it and we paste it on our eyeball. And it becomes our reality. And we don't suffer well, and we are overreactors. And we really want our way. And we want it now. Now is not quite fast enough, but now would be okay. How much would you like? I'd like more. It's all you can eat for $2. I want $4 worth. You don't need. I want $4 worth. Okay. You are not going to end up dealing with the broken person we came in with. The broken person that we came in with is the manifestation of our ego. We are going to find home. We are ET, home. We're going to find the true self. In that place, in that connection, we are united with our higher power. Not different, not separate, one. And when you're in that place, it's okay. Most of us in the room right now are in that place. Okay. This is the conversation. This is the story of Christmas. This is the campfire story. Come home. The call, the breakdown, the collapse, the surrender is the universe saying, over here, honey, come home. Come home. And in the process of our practice of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, Thomas Keating, the guy out of Snowmass, I took a 10-day retreat from him, and every other night he'd come down and we'd talk. And he'd say, in centering prayer, which is the code word in the church for meditation, because church doesn't like meditation because it's Eastern, many of the things that we would think needed to be healed with psychoanalysis get healed in the process of meditation. They are like plaque on our souls that Sheldon talked a little bit about. And they arise and they break off and they go away. And we are lightened without ever an in-depth conversation about that issue in our lives. The healing here, it is beyond healing. It is redemption. It is transformation. It is not improvement. It is not change. It is not taking that person that keeps breaking. It is our true self. The problem is that we get distracted. We cannot escape the human condition. We cannot evade the ego. The ego is always alive. So why the hell are we surprised? And why the hell do we spend so much time talking about our failures? And it's part of our story. Because it's, you know, if we ever get to a point where we aren't sinners, we're going to end up like a lot of the churches. The churches have lost a lot of their power because there aren't as many sinners in them as need be. Okay? We are a group of people who are not short on sinners. Which is our strength. Which is our strength. The strength of the higher power is in our weakness. As God said, I didn't design you to know ahead of time what to do. I designed you to be in constant contact with me. You will always know what to do if you are in contact with me. We all have a knower. You sit in a meeting and someone says something that's just the most profound thing you've heard in a week, and it just knocks you off your seat. And your head doesn't go, oh, I like that. I think I'll take a note of that. Your soul just goes, oh, yeah. You don't think it's so. You just know it is so. Chuck Chamberlain and Sandy Beach had a way of touching us with a clarity and a strength that contacted our knowers. And that knower wasn't something you developed. Okay? So inside, we have a piece of original equipment manufacture called a soul. And in that place is our union with our higher power. That is intact, unchanged, clean, pure. It is not a place that the ego can enter. It is not a place that most of us in our illness, because of our separation, have been able to be aware of on an ongoing basis. Tangentially, we have some awareness of that. Some of the great weeping that we do is this profound sense of separation and aloneness and apartness. The most profound sense of separation is our separation from God, which is who we are. My biggest issue is if I turn my will and my life over to the care of God, that I, you know, have to go to India with Sheldon. Okay. That's a head thought. That's not a heart thought. But if I really turn my will over, I mean, all of it, you know, my pornography, my, you know, my money, my anger, my business, all of it, I mean, that's a lot. Why would I have to? I don't have problems in two of those areas. Why would I have to? Okay. But what you discover as an old guy is you're coming home. You're not going over to Bob's house. You're going to your home. You're going to your place. You are a soaker hose. God placed the holes in your hose. They've been clogged up. You have now gone through a step process which has unclogged many of the holes in your place. Together, we're the fountain at the Bellagio. Individually, we're soaker hoses. Okay? But when those holes get unplugged, the force of God, the force of your higher power, the force of the universe comes through and you get to express who you be. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a transformation of being, not just a process of doing. The initial transformation has nothing to do with doing at all. It is a gift, and you are struck, surrendered. Then there are lots of things to do. But the doing simply brings us into the doing is at a, like almost at a lower level, and as it deepens, your higher power reveals herself to you. It isn't, most of us come in here with beliefs that are in the way of our discovery of our higher power. Most of us have to, the beliefs are struck out of us in our surrender. But when our ego returns, after the honeymoon, we reclaim them. We go out to the garage, we pick them up, and we start to walk with them again. But for most of us, our higher power is a collection of experiences, not ideas, not beliefs, not thoughts, By the time we are here a year or two, and you've been to 500 meetings, and you've seen the power, you've seen the grace, you've had the experience, you started to make the change, you are in the process, you just know. Someone walks up to you and says, tell me about it. And it's like, I can't. I don't yet have the words. I'm sober 18 months. I cannot explain it to you. I just know that 2 years ago, someone grabbed me and said, what's it all about? I said, I do not have a clue. You grab me today and say, what's it all about? I know. I can't explain it. But I know. Everybody who came to this room to spend the $400 or $500 that we spend at weekends like this knows. And what we're here for is encouragement. What we're here for, it is difficult as you get sober a long time. Your heroes are gone, and you start to lose your running buddies. 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I lost my sponsor of 43 years, excuse me. And I lost my spiritual advisor of 30 plus years. Big, big loss. My sponsor was like my dad. He was in his 90s when he died, and he hadn't been a sponsor in the typical way that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. So I used Frank Milos and Jerry Jones, who is now dead. Milos called me yesterday. He's thinking about coming down to Sandy's memorial. Why? He didn't know Sandy very well. It's one of the big guys. It's one of the big deal guys. One of the guys that pulled a pretty big wagon in Alcoholics Anonymous, and Frank's been pulling a pretty big wagon in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he wants to go honor the guy who pulled that wagon. Okay? Which is why I'm going to go to his... So, you don't have to become perfect. You do not have to take the troublesome pain in the ass that your ego and identity has manufactured. It is an artifice. It is not real. It is a manufactured product. There is inside of each of us a true self. And all spiritual literature talks about, you know, true self and false self. In that place, it's all okay. Which is what I used to love about my sponsor and used to love about my spiritual advisor. I had a place I could go where someone would pat me on the head and tell me it's okay. Okay. So when I talk to Milos today, when I'm telling him I'm having a bad day and told my wife to stick it in her ear, he doesn't tell me what I should have done, because I'm talking to just a fellow traveler. He knows that this is my day for, you know, stick it in the dirt a little bit. You do not have to get better. You already are everything you're ever going to be. You've been in this program 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Are you not you? Have you changed? Oh, I know things have changed in your life, but have you changed? Or have you simply found what has always been there? So the process of this program is not change in the sense that the mind holds the change. It is the process of removing the impediments that are in our way to the spiritual walk. Thank you. Thank you.